No rebound yet in the housing market. Maybe it's time to stop waiting.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson with The Morning Open, a look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. Coming up, if the housing market can't lead the recovery, what can? But first, where's Wall Street? Stocks are up this morning. The Dow up 196 points, about 1.7% at 11,240. The NASDAQ up 1.6%. The S&P 500 up 1.8% right now. Now let's get to the housing market. The closely watched Case-Shiller Index of home prices is out this hour, and it says that in July, home prices inched up about 1% from June nationwide, but were still down 4.1% from a year ago. Julie Niemann is an analyst with Smith Moore & Company. She's with us live from St. Louis, as she is every Tuesday. Good morning.
Morning, Jeremy.
So, Julie, a little bit of an inch up in July. Is that a glimmer of hope for the housing market?
Not really, because the sale of new homes was down the fourth month in a row. It's just the summer selling season, and you're still down year over year over 4%. The two areas that were up, Detroit, because you can buy a house there for the price of a New York dinner, and D.C., well, there's just no shortage of people who travel Yellow Brick Road to Emerald City.
Well, Julie, I heard the president's former top economist, Austin Goolsbee, over the weekend on TV saying essentially that we've got to stop waiting for the housing market to drag us out of this economic slump, that we're going to have to focus on other things. What do you think of that?
Well, it's exactly right, because the consumer used their houses as an ATM over the last 15 years leading up to this housing collapse. They took out equity, spent it on toys, games, prizes, vacations. Now incomes are flat and debt is growing to dangerous levels, and you're going to continuously see this working it off. So the consumer can't bring us out of this mess. It's going to be manufacturing and exports, machinery, farm equipment, earth-moving equipment, autos, aircraft, technology. All of this enhances productivity, but this is a long cycle. Now, arguably, you can say that it's healthier than the bubble prone area, but it's going to take a long time to take us out. And the recovery is going to depend upon our trading partners as well, and they're sliding into recession. But the dollar is likely to resume its slide once we get past this euro panic. That's going to make us competitive in both in price and product quality, but it is a long cycle.
Well, perfect transition, because that's where we're heading next. Julie Niemann, analyst with Smith Moore & Company, thanks so much.
You bet.
Well, now to Europe. The German Chancellor Angela Merkel is meeting today in Berlin with the Greek Prime Minister about the crucial next round of bailout funding for Greece. Merkel said today that whatever Germany can do to help, it will do. But with 80% of the German population against bailouts, why is she so willing to help? Margaret Heckel is the author of a best-selling biography of Angela Merkel, and she joins us now from Berlin. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, how does Angela Merkel see her role in the European debt crisis?
Well, she definitely wants to keep the euro, because she knows that if Greece goes out of the euro, or if the markets force Greece out of the euro, the whole idea of the common denomination will fall. And Germany has been profiting quite a lot from the euro, and we are an export nation, and it's quite clear that we need the euro to continue to be such a strong exporter to the world.
So there are obvious interests for Germany to keep Europe together, but is there a sense of duty on the part of Angela Merkel? Does she feel like it's her responsibility to keep this all intact?
I think so. Nobody wants to be the chancellor who sort of destroyed the euro. And I think she sees it as her duty, although the Germans are really turning against financing the rest of Europe. So it's a very tight line that she's walking.
Germany is a country that has seen a lot of history in the last 100 years or so. It's been the center of a lot of history. Do you think that Merkel sees herself right now in another one of those really big historic moments for Germany?
Yes, I think she does. For her, it's definitely a formative moment now with the euro. Absolutely comparable to the time when the wall came down over 20 years ago.
Margaret Heckel is the author of a best-selling biography of the German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com. by Allianz, providing investment, insurance, and retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. since 1896, AllianzUSA.com. And by Thomson Reuters, committed to empowering professionals of the world with the knowledge needed to do what they do best, the Knowledge Effect.
Today, New York City will begin testing cell phone service on subway platforms, and that could mean a big change for many New Yorkers' commutes. Sally Herships has more.
New York City is loud, but when you go down into the subway, it's almost quiet, which Pollyanna Rose really values. She was waiting for the L train to head home from her job as a customer service rep.
That 5, 10, 15 minutes is really, really important. I appreciate it because I deal with people all morning. I just want a little quiet time, honestly.
Chris Tokar said she's fine with the idea until she realized other passengers might be using their phones as well.
Well, yeah, that might be a problem.
Then there's the issue of always being available, which is what instantly came to mind for 26-year-old web designer Rachel Bushy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so my workday is going to start like another hour earlier and will end an hour later.
The only passenger I found who likes the idea wasn't a New Yorker. She was visiting from Washington, D.C., where the metro is already wired for cell phones. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And finally, the 1970s comedy duo Cheech and Chong have a new gig selling brownies. No, not that kind of brownie. They've been hired by General Mills to star in a new marketing campaign for Fiber One 90-calorie brownies. The online video ad has Cheech and Chong lugging thousands of the brownies in the back of a beat-up van to a music festival called Flaming Pole.
That's such an awesome van you got. What's in the back?
Brownies. Yeah, magic brownies.
The slogan for the new ad campaign delivered by Chong is Get High on Fiber. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Derivatives regulations are tough to explain. Perhaps we could get a little help from the Godfather.
In fact, that's a very good analogy because the whole system of risk management entails people doing certain things for the Godfather to ensure that he keeps his promise.
I'm Tess Vigeland, a clearinghouse only the Corleones could love. Next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.